All right, great. So here with the Seth Michael. You go by The Wrist for your rap name, right?
I do.
How did you come out? I probably asked you
this. I've been more and more The Wrist lately.
Right.
I have in a long time.
I probably asked you this the last time, but how did you come up with The Wrist?
You probably didn't. I don't think we talk about that too much. But not the most fascinating story, but the... actually, it is kind of a fun story. So when I was in college, so my name, when I started writing rhymes in high school and stuff, I used the name Bob Piggy as my pen name, which at the time didn't sound that corny. Mm-hmm. At the time, it was kind of it was like 1997.
Mm.
And that was kind of like current slang, sort of. But I went by that, but then it just snapped. By 99, it sounded really corny. So we needed, but I didn't have any good names or anything. And this guy I used to rap with, who then became like a mortal enemy, he said, "You should be Terrorist, because what you write brings terror or whatever." So it was like Terror, TerrorWrist, mm-hmm. was originally what it became in like 99. And I just said, okay, fuck it, that's fine. I was never in love with it. But then people liked it. It kind of grew on me a little bit. And then 9/11 happened. Many years later,
right?
And which I shouldn't laugh at, but then which I still kept it. I entered there was a freestyle battle on Rutgers campus, like tournament, like right. It was like a couple months after 9/11, so I used a different name for that, but I was still using it for quite a while until about. And no one ever really said anything because when it was written, it didn't bother anybody. But if you just heard it. Just heard the word terrorist, it would bother people.
Yeah.
I was performed like, so if I got like introduced at a show, some people didn't know the deal. They were like, I had this guy, there were these train bombings in Madrid a long time ago, in the early 2000s. I want to say 03, 04, something like that. And I was performing at Old Bay in New Brunswick. And I got off stage, and this guy tells me he's from Madrid, and that name really bothers him, but I'm amazing. And it was a whole speech, and I didn't know what to say. And I think I just went like, I have CDs for sale if you want. I think that was pretty much what I said in response. So I started getting uncomfortable, oddly enough, years after that. Because then, like, I had an okay following in Brunswick. Or at least I knew a lot of people. There was, like, a thriving music scene at the time.
Right.
So occasionally, I'd be, like, walking down the street in New Brunswick at 2 a.m. and someone would yell, "Yo, terrorist," across the street at me. Which was just very uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. Yeah.
So that got weird. So then what happened was, one year, there used to be this big, it was a festival every summer in Cincinnati called Scribble Jam.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have heard of it because Eminem came in, like, second in the freestyle battle in, like, 97 or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
before
yeah.
Before Eminem was famous.
Yeah, I don't mean to cut you off, but, like, a couple months ago, I saw one of those, like a YouTube video of that, like, one of his battles from there. It was just, like, so weird to, like, see him, like, just crush in that room.
Big one. Sorry. The big one that's around that people usually find is the Rap Olympics, it was called.
Yeah, the Rap Olympics. Yeah, that's what it was. Not the
Scrum
thing.
That's probably the one you found. That
one's really
fun. But it was probably about a year before that that he did a Scribble Jam. And it was really early in Scribble Jam inception too. But anyway, so that festival, freestyle battle tournament, whatever, went on for quite a while. Until, I don't remember what year it stopped. It doesn't happen now. But why did I bring this up? Oh, so I used to go to a Scribble Jam every year back in like the mid-2000s.
Mm-hmm.
The same with the 2000s. we used to caravan there, basically. Me and, like, there was, like, some magazine guys and rappers. This guy, Pumpkinhead, who was a pretty somewhat legendary underground rap figure, who passed away, but he was a friend of mine. He was him and whoever else he kind of fought. It was kind of the deal. So we all, we'd be on the road from New York City to Cincinnati for a day and a half or whatever. Well, because it's a long story. But anyway, they call me for updates, like, yo, we're gonna go over here. It was before, like, GPSs were common. So it's like, okay, we're getting off on an exit in a couple miles, FYI, kind of thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And then at some point, this guy, Bubs, who runs this, I don't know if he still runs this magazine, but he ran this magazine called Beautiful Decay, which is like an art magazine, quarterly art magazine in the city. He's like a photographer guy, he's a cool guy. But he started saying, like, yo, we can't keep saying terrorist over the phone. This is getting weird. Right. And then he dubbed me the wrist on that road trip.
Ah.
To shorten it. And then I kind of ran, and I liked it. And I kind of ran. People were calling me wrist for short anyway for a long time. That was kind of how people just naturally shortened it. But this guy, Fubs, from Beautiful Decay Magazine, who initially put the wrist together. And I liked the sound of it. And he kind of ran with that going forward.
Well, at least that, like, that worked out with the wording and everything of just, okay, good to bundle the rest. That's really cool.
It's funny, like, I never came up with anything. It's just other people come up with names, and I'm like, yeah, that worked.
That makes sense.
Names are hard, but...
Oh, yeah. I can imagine. So, you were sort of, like, in the late 90s, early 2000s doing it. I'm so interested in it, because I watch a lot of, like, rap battle stuff on TikTok, and it's, like, it's so different. I think it's probably different now from how it was.
Battling?
Like, battling.
Yeah, battling, I know that I'm pretty intimately familiar with this stuff, because I know, like, so Scribble Jam, when I go to Scribble Jam every year, especially the guys from California, a lot of those guys turned into the big battle rap guys later, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I know some of these guys pretty, a little bit, friendly way.
Mm-hmm.
I witnessed the whole thing. I witnessed the whole evolution.
Right, you get to see, like, the, like, it just seems more...
Not closely as some people I know, but, like, the West Coast battle rap scene especially, I know a lot of these. There's this guy named Awkwards, OKWERD.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of a legendary figure in the battle rap world.
Mm-hmm.
And even before Chick, so, like, I met him, there was a Rocksteady crew used to do an anniversary thing every summer. Now it's turned into a thing in Newark. I don't know if they did it last year or not, but they used to have a freestyle battle as part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And Q Unique, who used to be from a group called Arsonists, was throwing it. This was 2002, I think? Summer 2002, I'm pretty sure. I was in the battle, freestyle battle tournament for Rocksteady, and I met this guy, Awkwards, from California. We battled each other. We had a very tight battle. We had definitely had the battle of the night at the time. But we talked after. We ended up hitting it off a bit, and I started doing beat swap and stuff. But through that, that opened a lot of doors for me.
Right.
But especially in that West Coast rap world. But in any case, it's way different. That's what you were asking about. It went from basically tournament format of freestyles where you didn't know who was going to be there. You didn't know who was going to be battling. And, you know, and those freestyles off the top of the head. And usually maybe two rounds, 30 seconds back and forth.
Right.
And now we're at pre-written half-hour freaking exchanges.
Right. That's what I was going to ask. Like, it seems like nowadays, from what I've seen, it's just so, like, they're good and they can... Sometimes they can be on the spot, but it seems like it's pretty pre-written. And
they do. Some of the guys are really good at coming up with on-the-spot, like, comebacks and stuff. That was what I was good at. They call it rebuttaling. Like, in the freestyle era, that was my strength. I was pretty good at coming up, flipping something on the spot.
Right.
And coming back, you know. Which was a very valuable skill.
Right.
A lot of guys, and a lot of guys are good at that now, too. But the thing is, like, to me, like, if you don't have to flow over a beat, and you can kind of do whatever rhythm you want, it shouldn't be that hard.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have all the time in the world to play with.
Right.
And so I don't know how to explain it, but it's there's no rhythm constraint that you would have in a freestyle battle. So it's like, to me, it's easier to freestyle in that format.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to remember, there's so much memory. I did a couple, when that stuff first started, there was this company, Grindtime, mm-hmm. that was kind of the first one who was blown up with it. Well, URL was back a long time, but it wasn't as... It was more like bootlegs and stuff. I wanted to give it a shot at one point. And this guy, Jinx, was running, he did a league in New Brunswick called Put Up or Shut Up. and he was doing a few events, and they were fun, so I was like, put me on against somebody, and I did a few, they're on YouTube, I did a few battles in his league, which was fun.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, if I'm gonna write that much rhymes, like, I wanna make a song out of it. I don't wanna write 20 minutes worth of. It's like, that's like a short, you're writing like a short album's worth of material.
Oh, yeah.
You're writing like an EP worth of material for one battle that, if you're big, it's going to be seen a lot. It's, I don't know. I'm not as connected to this as I used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the guys I know, I just don't talk to them that often. So I don't have the in and outs knowledge that I used to have about a lot of stuff. But it's, I don't know. I can't imagine.
No, that makes sense. Like,
oh, yeah, it's night and day. The scenes are completely different.
Oh, yeah. Like, I just know from comedy that scenes can change so differently, and you don't know, like, you know, who you're really hanging with. It's like, it switches so much. Because you're just living life, and you just find your people that you're with for a while. And it's like, you know, sometimes you're with the people that are, like, have the most shows and have stuff, and then sometimes you're just rocking with people who are your friends. And it's like, you know...
Yeah.
Did you have a lot of, do you still have a lot of people that you're connected to that you, like, sort of collaborate with or anything?
Yeah. I mean, there's people that are, I'm tighter with than others, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's people that I know casually through the scenes that if they saw me, they'd remember me. And stuff.
Right.
But I guess I'm not going to blow this up. Like, it's weird how it works. So, like, I don't know if you ever heard of Iron Solomon. He's a pretty thick battle rap guy.
Huh?
Iron Solomon at a time was as big as anybody ever was from battle rapping.
Mm-hmm.
But I used to know him casually, Scribble Jam stuff, and I'd see him around. He actually judged a few events in New Brunswick or something, the Bumpkin that was thrown, I remember, but I knew him casually.
Right.
But I was at a record store event in Philly a couple months back. It was in November. I guess it was longer ago than I think. Time flies when you have three children. But and I ran into him down there, and he had no fucking clue who I was. And it felt like the most awful feeling ever. He wasn't a dick, but it was like, I can't believe this guy has no recollection of me. Now, I look a lot different, and it has been a long time. But he had no idea where he was. He's like, where do I know you're from? And I'm explaining. He's like, oh. So it was strange. But, so it's weird, but then there's other guys, this dude Thesaurus, who's I think maybe the best battle rapper who ever lived. I think there's a very strong argument for that.
Oh.
I still see him for 15 years and totally knows who I am. So it's like just different people. That's also a difference between California and New York people, though.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, like California people. They're just
California,
like,
California people are so much more friendly.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Not that Iron Solomon's ever been a dick to me, but he's a New Yorker.
Right. You know, it's just like a tougher, like, that makes sense. Yeah. So,
it's just a different vibe. But, yeah, I know there's some people that would have no idea who I am, who are, like, marginally famous people, and there's some people that are the same that would absolutely love to hear from me, you know?
Right.
No one I talk to, like, my buddy Silent Night, he's local. I talk to him often. I don't know, a lot of it, it's more just, one, my bizarre social tendencies to begin with.
Right.
Like, I was talking to somebody the other day, because I was like, what are you doing tonight? She was like, blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, she was like, I wish you would ask sooner. I'm like, and it hit me. I'm like, yeah, I like, don't make plans all week, and then I eventually had nothing to do.
Right, yeah. That can be tough, yeah.
So a combination of that just tendency I have, plus it's more just becoming a dad.
Right.
Married for a decade.
You have stuff to do.
You just lose touch with people as you have a family and you get older. It just kind of, you'll see. It just kind of happens.
Right. It just, I can understand that just gets, like, gets in the way with that. Do you yeah. Have you performed live in recent years at all, or has it just been, like, kind of putting stuff out online?
Musically, I haven't had my buddy Silent Night, who I just mentioned, don't like half the shows I can show up and do something at. But they're always a day I can't make it. like the last like year.
Wow.
That's been happening. But I got up and did, well, he's from A Boy Silent Night. There's a band, they're called the band called Fuse. They're pretty known around the world, but he's Seagrass with them. They kind of became a joint effort at some point. And when they do shows, they'll do like a cypher thing in the middle where they'll have guests come up. And I've been invited to do that a couple times. I just haven't been able to make it work. But I did that. I don't think I've done that since I started making music again. I didn't start making music again until this past October.
Oh, okay.
When I really started lighting into it. Right. And then it took me a while to get the ball rolling on certain shit. But when I really started writing rhymes again and really being like, I'm going to actually make more music was probably mid-October. What's the point? What'd you ask me?
So what kind of stuff are you, like, rapping about now? Like, do you have anything?
Well, that's interesting. So the initial stuff I started writing was kind of an emotional response to just some shit going along. It was kind of like recanting the last however many months of my life at the time. And I was just kind of lamenting where I've ended up because nothing, you know, I'm divorced, father of three, which was never the plan.
Right.
And it's you know, a lot of things. And coming with divorce is a lot of, like, fuck, this was never what I intended at all. Mm-hmm. So, like, my entire life still is in a place that I never really saw coming, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So the first stuff I started writing was kind of in that vein. And then I almost died of tomatoes. And then, like, I started, like, dating again, if that makes sense. I'm just going to say it that way. It's complicated. But
right,
it,
yeah. That makes sense, yeah.
So this has kind of become, it's slowly turning into the divorce and death album.
Right.
Which sounds crazy, but it's really some of the most upbeat stuff I've ever made in my life, which is interesting.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense, because you just have, like, a new lease on life. I can imagine after that sort of happens, you're just like, well, fuck it, I gotta do.
I've kind of gotten a new lease on life in, like, three different ways in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of crazy. It really, like, I've just rediscovered myself.
Right.
Because I learned I was burying so much shit of myself in the divorce, like, just to try to keep the marriage going. There's a lot of things about me that I was tampering down.
Ah.
And meeting new people and getting out there and being creative again almost dying and getting my medical shit under control. There's been a lot of opportunity to, not change, but to get comfortable with who I am.
Yeah, because you just want to keep on going, and at least, like, when you have those experiences, it gives you, you know, it's the same thing with comedy, like, it gives you shit to talk about and, like, do stuff with. And even though it's, like, sucks, it's, like, cathartic.
The last album I put it out in November, December.
Mm-hmm.
But it's music I made, it's a chunk of songs I made in 2012 and a chunk I made in 2016. And then a couple leftovers and things before that. But if you listen to it, I'm not talking about, the one song on it is about, like, kind of me lamenting that I'm not that creative anymore. Called Orion's Nuts. That song is kind of like a lament to, like, what, I don't know why I can't do it. And then there's another song on there called Talk Ish, which is about, I don't want to rap anymore. But then the rest of it, I'm rapping really good, but it's a lot of just utter nonsense. I'm just rhyming shit.
Right.
You know what I mean? And if that compared to the new shit I'm working on, right? Like, so right. Like that, there was a lot going on in my life when I made some of that stuff. Like, I was, my marriage was starting to become really bad. And the 2016 song, my stepson was like, it was before he died, but it was like in the hospital, so it was like, I was kind of making music to distract myself from real life rather than using it to reflect real life, which is just as valid in my opinion. But because I've argued with people who'd be like, oh, this guy made this song, and my album's not very good. And they'll be like, no, it's really, but listen to how real it is. I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, the song about his real life, like, I don't give a shit. I'm like,
right.
The song's good. The song's good or it's not. I don't care how genuine it is. But some people really care about that. But then right. I remember when I was making the song, talking with this person, I was like, I'm like, yo, I do not want to throw myself into the misery that my life is right now into the music. I want to do this to enjoy myself.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Like, it's interesting how it can be both. Because now it's the opposite. Now I'm totally throwing myself into it as to what I'm doing and how things are, how my life is and all this shit. But it's not dark. That's part of me. I went through a mental health journey with the divorce also. So that's part of it. I got my mental health under control, my physical, like, it's the mall. Of course, Seth is the whole new guy.
Yeah. I never knew that about your stepson. That's terrible. I didn't know about that.
Oh, I'm sorry. So bad. I thought that, I'm apologizing for that mixed up. No, I don't like just dumping it on people.
Right, so, yeah, that makes sense.
I figured you must have heard that at some point. I guess not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a stepson who passed away in January 2017 from, after a long fight. He had something called an AVM, which most people have never heard of. I certainly never knew. It's pretty rare. It's basically a cluster of veins, usually in your brain. That's what his was.
Oh.
Kind of like a big tangled mess of veins. And what can happen is over time, pressure builds up. Kind of like if you kinked a hose. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay.
So, like, it's kind of had his a bunch of tangled veins in his brain and eventually ruptured up. And we didn't know it was there. And it eventually ruptured on him.
Oh.
And caused severe brain damage. And he was coming back, but then he ended up basically on septic and passed away eventually. His body just went away too much.
How old was he when it happened?
He was 11.
Oh.
Yeah.
That must have been really tough. I mean, was your original partner that you're not with anymore, was she supportive of your rap music, or were you not doing it during that period of...
Complicated question. It's, I've talked, so me and my ex-wife, the mother of my children, we're very good friends right now.
Mm-hmm.
We actually sit around and chat about our lives together sometimes. We chat about our new lives. But also reflect on stuff. But, it's funny, I was talking to her about this not that long ago, because, a woman who I met at one point was, like, really into my music. And it felt so different having, and that was very valuable for me to experience, because... my ex-wife was not, especially by the time the marriage was ending. She was very supportive in the beginning. So when me and her got together, I was finishing, my album I put out in 2008 was Cyclone Sucks, which is on Spotify. Everybody go listen. But it,
yeah, I think I listened to that one, the 2008 one.
That one's been on there a while.
Yeah, yeah.
But, probably since, I don't remember. But, so I was in the process of, like, getting that out. Like, I was done with it when me and her started dating.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the process of trying to put it out. And that was a very sour experience. And it kind of put me off. Well, also, it was a combination of not being in Make New Music mode, because I was trying to properly distribute that one and get it out, like, the right way.
Right.
I was trying to figure out how to do that, which I'm not good at.
Yeah.
But I was performing a lot at the time, but I wasn't making much new stuff. I was making beats, like the one song, there's a song called Medication on the thing I put out last year called If It Ain't Broke, Break It, is the name of that.
Mm-hmm.
The song in there called Medication, that's the one song I made in that era. It just wasn't, there was something about the marriage that wasn't conducive to me making music, and I don't know, but she was very supportive, like coming to all my shows and stuff in the beginning. And then I think as she stopped, so like, in 2012, when I made some of the songs for If It Ain't Broke, Break It, there's a song on there called Public Urination. And I remember I made a bunch of songs. I made that and a couple other things. Me and my ex-wife were in the car, and I was like, check this out. I made some new stuff. And I played her that song, and that song, the chorus part of it is going, I can't believe I shaved my balls for this. And she was just fucking disgusted.
Oh, my God. So,
like, I just was like, I'm not showing her my music anymore. And then I just kind of stopped making it. He was in the hospital. He was in a hospital in Delaware, and my ex-wife was staying there full time, and my daughter was with her. My daughter was one at the time,
mm-hmm.
So like she was there a lot. So I was by myself a lot. So that's why I made some more songs. That's tough to do. But so she went from very supportive to not supportive over time as our marriage got worse, and we're both in denial of trying to save it. But, it just wasn't, so it's complicated. And then eventually I just wanted to do stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
It was like around 2012, maybe 2011. I don't remember why I started doing stand-up. I guess it should be, everybody else, like, I started on the laugh.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say 2011, but I could be making that up.
Right, like, that's kind of...
It was around 2011, 2012. But, right. When I told her, like, I really want to try stand-up, she, like, wasn't crazy about that either.
Mm.
And I remember her telling me, I was like, why? What's the problem? And she was like, I don't know, comedians like go crazy or something like that. And I was like, yeah, but I said I don't think the comedy makes them crazy.
Right.
I said, I think whatever imperfections I have in me that make me want to try this, I think they're already there. I don't think that comedy creates them.
Right. It just sort of.
Yeah, she was like, they just say weird shit. I'm like, you watch me rap weird shit in front of strangers our entire relationship. What's the difference? Because she's a fan of stand up too. That's what was confusing.
Yeah, it can be tough, you know, to get that support of, you know, stuff. It's like, it could just happen. Like, people get very weird about when you do anything creative.
She has seen 0 seconds of my stand-up.
Mm.
however many years I tried.
Right.
No, she just never, and I talked to her about this. Recently, and she was like, yeah, just, you know, she'd rather I was pouring more effort into the marriage than nothing.
Right, that makes sense.
It was kind of her thoughts at the time, but our shit was such a mess, and we're not now, which is good. I don't want to hate the fucking mother of my children.
No, that makes sense. Like, you just want to have that, and it's like responsibility on top of whatever you want to do. Like, I can imagine, like, the struggle between that can probably be really annoying, just like, you have so much that you want to do, but it's like, you have shit that you gotta get done. And it's like, you know.
I mean, that's still the case.
And
it's, leading a full life while trying to be creative in multiple endeavors. It's just, there's not enough time. Because I work full time. I don't even work full time, like I said, I have no time.
Mm-hmm.
I said I have no money.
Right, so you just had, you know, when you have that time, you're just like, okay. Do you think doing comedy sort of invoked, like, made you want to do, like, rapping more? Because the one thing that I know from people, especially with one-liner comedians, like, I know you're not a one-liner guy, but I know that comedy stand-up especially can be very rhythmic, if that makes sense, with jokes. So I was curious if, like, you felt that similarity.
First of all, for the record, I wish I was a one-liner comic. Yeah. Those are really hard to write.
Yeah.
And I don't write that much anymore. If my comedy didn't make that obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But, sorry, I have to eat a granola while my blood sugar is dropping. But, the rhythms are very, very different. And now, when I started stand-up, in the beginning, especially the first few years, I was so enthralled by it, I had no desire to make music at all.
Mm-hmm.
I was like really do a stand up. You know, I had this new hobby, and I was like, "This is really cool." I was hooked on it for a long. I guess I still am. I still do it.
Right.
But at that time, I was like enthralled with it. Like, I was constantly writing and trying to come up with material, working on shit. Now I just kind of wing it. I just kind of look at what I thought was funny during the week and see if I can make a joke out of it on the spot.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I know it's both, like, things that you do, and it's just, like, it's the, you have, like, that thing, you seem very comfortable on stage, and I know we talked about that earlier, how, like, there was a lot of nervousness, and it's, like, have you ever felt like you had the same, like, it helped with your stage presence and everything? Like, to me, I always feel like improv really didn't help that much for me to make me that, like, everything that I did was so different in each incarnation of everything that I performed. When I was singing, it was different. When I was doing improv, it was different. Did you ever feel that? Or, like, was it just...
I don't know, your singing in front of people has almost no commonalities with stand-up, period.
No, because it's incredibly, like, you just got to stay on beat. Like,
when you do music, and I was a rapper, it's a little bit, but, like, singing is like, you kind of lose yourself in what you're doing.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You're not really thinking about... You're going to fuck up if you're thinking about the audience. You're just
about
singing the song. You know? You're just... You can kind of disappear in the performance of music. Stand-up does not work that way.
No. Stand-up has to be very alert.
Stand-up's really the only art form that doesn't function like that.
Right.
I've never done a play or anything, but I'd imagine in a play you kind of lose yourself in the character and in the moments, and then I don't think you're, like, present with the audience like after you do a stand-up.
Much right. More. Yeah.
I really don't think there's anything like... in that regard, but, what did you ask me?
So I guess I even forgot. I was just like, I was acting like how, if there was any connection to, like, making you more comfortable on stage.
The only thing was I was comfortable with a lot of people already, you know?
Right.
That was the only, for a lot of people, which you probably had the same experience, for a lot of people, there's the hurdle of just talking in front of people.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Or being on the, center focus of the room.
Right.
That alone is a hurdle to get over. People with stage experience are hopefully over that already, you know? So I didn't have to worry about that. But that's really the only thing that helped. Like, the timing is night and day. Like, stand-up rhythm and rap rhythm, and it's all, it's just totally unrelated.
Stand-up I can imagine, like, you know, especially given...
Stand-up timing, it's almost wrong calling it a rhythm, but it is.
Right, I only notice it...
It's not a musical
rhythm. Yeah, I only notice it occasionally with people. Like I said, like, when I... A couple of my friends who are one-liner comics, like, that's the one thing that, like, I see the rhythm in. And some of my jokes have a little bit of, like, pattern to them, but it's, like, not really.
Like, if you watch a guy, you know what I suggest watching to anybody, any comic, period, anyone who wants to do or try stand-up, they need to watch, I think, the last Norm MacDonald special on Netflix.
Oh, yeah, that one was really good.
The one that's just him in his apartment?
Yeah.
Doing it to a camera? I forget what it's called. But for me, Norm MacDonald's my favorite comic by a mile.
Oh yeah,
to me, if you watch that, if you understand the how stand-up functions, the construction of it and stuff, like if you've ever tried to do stand-up even and just watch that special, I think you can pick up on the different rhythms that he has in there and where he's emphasizing things with that, because there's no audience.
Right.
You can really hear and notice that he's not playing to the audience at all. He's just going, so it's interesting to hear, but you can hear, like, spaces where he's leaving a beat for audience reaction.
Or, right.
Like, the intentional delay on certain, like, it's interesting to watch from a craft thing.
Yeah, because I bet it's so...
perspective, in my opinion. Like, yeah. It's fascinating to watch in that regard, and I think any comedian should watch that and just kind of pick up what he's doing, because there's subtleties to his rhythms in there, I think, that you won't hear when there's an audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think watching a master comic do an hour with no audience like that, I think there's a lot of interesting mechanics in there.
Right. You know? Yeah.
So that's, I don't know, I forget why.
I mean, yeah, that makes sense. Like, I mean, you know, one of the coolest things about Norm MacDonald is just, like, I know a few comics who, like, know him. So, like,
okay.
It was cool to, like, that was one of the like, sad but, like, kind of nice things when a lot of those comedians died last year was, like, everyone that sort of knew them, that I knew, connected to them, was like, oh, they're great people. And it's just, like, you like hearing that about, like, people, like, in whatever industry you're in. Like, you know, I bet when you met people and, you know, when you were doing... the rap stuff, like, that were cool, you were like, oh, okay, this is, like, a relief that, like, the people that I look up to are cool.
You've heard the phrase, don't meet your heroes.
Right, yeah.
You know, I've got to experience that a few times, why that's a bad idea.
But, right, yeah.
It's people are just, you know, it works the same. Some people are assholes and some aren't. It just works that way everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, they're rapping is a little interesting because sometimes rappers will be a well, I guess comics, too, it'll be a character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. And
rappers are a lot of that, too. So the more interesting thing with rappers is learning who was the character and who wasn't. You
right.
know what I mean? And I guess comedy's probably... I haven't met a lot of, like, known comics.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure it works. I'm sure it's very similar.
Yeah.
But
a lot of it, from, like, what I've experienced with this podcast, is people just... They create sort of, like, a shell just because they become so hard, like... They just dealt with so much shit. They're, like, very tough. That's the one thing that I've known about, like, every sort of headliner that I've had on the podcast and, like, everything is that's, like... And I think you could probably find it similar with, like, a lot of the people in rap music that are a little bit bigger is, like, they just sort of went through so much shit. It's just, like, nothing can break them. It's, like...
Yeah, it
it's, like, you just...
You don't have... The music doesn't work the same. You kind of can't go... You kind of can't move up the ranks of stand-up without going through some major...
Yeah.
Like, you know, the hell gigs and the Mama's performers and three people in a Chinese restaurant, like those kind of things.
Yeah.
I don't think you can move up the stand-up ladder without having those experiences.
Right.
I don't know about all music, but rap music does not really function that way.
Was I know.
You can, especially the new guys, like, you just have the fucking TikTok trend that blew up. And the next thing you know, this fucking 19-year-old shithead is making millions of dollars.
Yeah. Is that tough sort of, like, look at? Like, do you have judgments on sort of social media people that sort of started in that zone? Or does it not really matter to you?
I'm at the age where if you're still bitter at other people's successes, you need to fucking seek help.
That's a healthy way to look at it.
I think that's normal when you're like 25. But like, I'm 40, I'll be 43 in a month and a half. Mm-hmm. And if I'm still sitting around bitter over people that made it over me or whatever, I'd just be a fucking miserable piece of shit, you know?
Right.
So, no, I don't judge. It's also not, I tell people all the time, I can speak to this with music. I've had arguments with people. Like, you know, a guy like, I used to use Kanye as my example, but that's not a good example now.
It's
not a neo-Nazi, that's a huge rapper. Or like, Jay-Z's too big. I can't think of an example, but like some, you know, Kanye 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Like a guy like that, they worked their fucking ass off.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, people see it. I was arguing with my brother once. I'm like, yo, like, you know, I have my day job, I work, I'm a hard worker, but, like, I'm not, a guy like Kanye really is busting his ass.
Oh,
you
know yeah.
What I mean? He really is working, like, 18 hours a day, probably. You know, especially when he had the shoes go up and get the fashion and the music and the blah, blah, blah. Like,
right.
You can't do that successfully without working your ass off. There's just no way to do it, even if you think it's bullshit. So, the people that blow up through, like, a social media quirk or whatever,
mm-hmm.
I don't judge it at all because it's not, like, that easy to do either.
No, because once you have that...
It's a different way.
Right. Like, because you still have to...
If you have some random TikTok blow up, that's easier than Brian in the stand-up world for a decade, I guess.
Right.
But it's not like, it's a simple thing to do.
Yeah, because you have to live up to that expectation of whatever it is. Like, you still have to perform. You still have to be, like... Okay, you still have to prove your worth most of the time.
It's a lot of work. It's you notice, like, anyone who's successful on social media, there's a constant stream output. You know what I mean? You can't, like, you go viral once and then 6 months later you go viral. It doesn't work, you know.
It's
got to be a constant stream of shit. And that's not easy to do.
Do you have, like people that you... sort of go to or collaborate with a little bit, or just like you go for advice, or you know, to sort of like get stuff.
With my music.
Yeah, like any type of like people that you sort of.
I have a group of friends that have been running stuff by for. I don't even know how long. Long time, you know, over 20 years, some of them, and they're for different reasons. like different people's input, I value different. Like it's I have one new song completely done. Mm-hmm. For the new whatever I'm working on. It's going to turn into an album at some point. I just don't know. Anyway. I have people. My one friend is not a big hip-hop guy. So I like really like his perspective on the production, especially. Then I have rap guys that I want them to hear. And like I want to know their opinion on the rapping. Then I get like... I have a few casual people that I just want to know what they take from it. And they have no relation to this kind of music. Then, like, this guy, Vanderslice, who produced most of Recycling Sucks, who's a pretty known underground producer at this point, I have to run it by him, and if he gives me praise at all, I know I've nailed it.
Oh, that's great. You know what I mean? Yeah.
He's a brutally honest guy, and very critical, yeah. And what I do isn't really what he likes. So it's like, what I'm kind of doing now. So it's like, I know his sensibilities enough to know what he's into, and a lot of shit I'm doing now. It's just too weird for him, you know. But so if I get the praise from him, I know I fucking nailed it.
Right.
Because I know it's genuine.
Yeah.
My friends like, you know, it's hard to find people that you respect that'll tell you like.
Oh yeah. I have that a lot with like when COVID sort of happened and there stopped being a whole lot of audience members and it was just comedians. Like the way that I sort of shifted to how to improve like my act at all, my sets and stuff was just. I wanted to make the people that I was friends with and the people that I looked up to laugh. So, like, if I can make VJ laugh, he's a hilarious person. But he doesn't laugh that much at, like, open mics at all. So, like, if I can make him laugh, like, that's great.
Yeah.
And, like, Sean McDonough, I love trying to make laugh, and it's just like people that I look up to a whole lot. It's just like once you have that barrier of like, okay, I need to.
It's funny because once you sat through so many open mics, yeah. But like, there's stuff I'll be there sitting. I overlap a little bit because if I think something was funny, but it didn't make me have a physical reaction, I want the person up there to know. No, I enjoyed that.
Right. You. I'm just laughing hard at it. But that's the thing that's hard about stand-up is once you do it, you sort of, like I got a lot of flack from Dan from being on my phone. It's like, stand-up is an auditory thing to me, mostly. Like, I listen to comedy albums, like, I don't need to see someone's, like, for the most part. Like, sometimes you do when there's, like, act house and it's a physical type of bit. But for me, like, it's very auditory to me. So, like.
It matters, though. I mean, I did music.
Yeah.
And the performance of it, the visuals was very important.
Right, yeah.
Like, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
But once you're, you know, it's an in-person experience.
Yeah, of course. And you want people paying attention to you if you're performing at all. It's like, you know, you crave that, like, attention of 100%.
I heard Chris Rock once say, he's saying you still get scared, even at his level, who years ago. He's saying, like, you still get scared going on. I'm scared. Because you get those butterflies going on stage still. And it might have been Howard Stern. I think he might have been on Howard Stern. He said, like, what, are you afraid they're not going to laugh? And Chris Rock said, no, you're afraid they're not going to listen.
Right. You're afraid they're not going to listen. And the one thing that I thought was, you know, interesting about him that he said, you know, you were talking earlier about how, like, comedians just laugh, and I hear that, like, a lot. But one thing that really drove me is him saying, like, any reaction was really just, like, fine for him. It's like, if you can make people feel anything during your stuff, it's just like, if you can make, because that's the one thing that, like, whenever I have that little bit of spark, like, I'm not really that mean of a comedian, so, like, if I have, like, a line or something that, like, offends people, sometimes I can either be, like, really, like, sympathetic and be like, oh, I didn't mean to make you upset, but sometimes I'll be, like, happy, I'll be, like, bragging or something, and I'm like, wow, these words in this order made people upset. It's like,
I've apologized so many times, whenever,
when,
I don't know, I don't like being mean on stage either.
Yeah.
My
no, it just happens, so, like, with some people. It's like, oh.
It just happens, yeah. But, like, I think a few times I've ever done it, like, I apologize, like, immediately.
Yeah.
like, I say the mean thing, I get the laugh, and the first thing I'm out is, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just can't help but laugh.
Oh, yeah.
The meanest thing I ever said on stage was about, Mike, what was his last call? The one, you know, the one with the physical ailment.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I know who you're talking about, yeah.
Meanest thing I ever said on stage was about him when I was hosting at the Yale, which was, and it just
kind of
spilled out of my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's,
yeah, it just happens, and you're just like,
you might have been. I don't know if you were there or not. I was hosting early on when I came back to the Yale, which, and Reggie couldn't do it, and Farley wasn't back yet, and I hosted a few times.
Oh,
and he went on, and I wasn't really letting people.
Oh,
I was being very loose. And Kyle Colorado comes up to me, and so Mike Cotturo, whatever his name is,
yeah,
was on stage. And he's gone, he's doing his thing, and he's been up there for a while. And then Kyle comes up to me, and he goes, he's going to keep, if you don't light him, he's going to go forever.
Right.
You're going to have to light him. Because I wasn't really lighting people. And I was like, oh, okay. So I light him, and he still went another 2-3 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
I've lighted him a few times, so that's my guy on stage. As soon as I got up, I'm like, all right, give it up for Mike. Run him away, just like that car accident. And the place blew up, and I immediately have felt bad. I'm like, I'm sorry.
Right.
It just kind of came out of my mouth.
The thing that I always have is, like,
it's also one of the funniest things I've ever said on stage. Like, maybe I shouldn't do that.
Right. Like, my brother, he's very tough for, like, his size, because he had to be, because he's 5'4". But it's, like, the thing that was always weird to me was, like, I was always, like, I'm 5'7", 5'8". Like, I know that, like, I can't say much. I know that I'm going to get my ass kicked if I say something too much. It's just, like, that's one thing that I'm always sort of dealing with, is, like, I'm always afraid that I'm going to get hit, because I'm just a smart ass with stuff.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm, you're taller than me. You've got to be 5'8".
Yeah,
unless I'm shrunk. I used to weigh in at 5'7". I used to measure at 5'7".
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully I still do. But, I was talking to someone about that recently, because, like, I can't fight anybody, and,
do you get that whole entire, like, small thing on, like, like I know you're on you were on the dating apps. Was that ever a problem?
It's hard to go through life knowing 2/3 of the population would beat the shit out of you.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
It's the most fun feeling.
Yeah.
But it's also, but then you get older and you get on Zoloft and you realize, oh, no one wants to beat you up.
No.
But, you know, there was a period of time, like my phone was making there was a period of time where I was, like, actively going out in New Brunswick, like, I'm gonna fucking get a fight tonight, because I was just angry. And it never happened either.
Right. Well, that's good. At least it never culminated in anything happening.
Sometimes, I also had a lot of big friends, though. Like, I kind of was a little guy hanging out with a bunch of big dudes for a good period of my 20s when I was drinking a lot. Like, I've never had a problem with stand-up. Like, no one's ever been like, I'm going to fuck you up because of that joke. No, I've had it with battle rap once or twice. And people got kind of mad.
Right.
But it didn't amount to it. But nothing happened. But people got angry.
But they never...
I've had it in rap performances. Just shows more than anything. But the most times that everyone's had when I was like 22 and I was like going out drinking these Muslims with people, I was just a fucking maniac. And I was saved by having big friends at least two times.
Yeah. That's always a good thing to have when you have people like that that are just like, okay, they can sort of be like insurance for that. It's like, okay, they can help you with that.
Yeah, I don't know. I was about to tell a story, but I don't think I'm going to. The era of Me Too, it sounds way worse.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
I'm not going to tell the story.
Right.
But,
no, I can imagine, you know, early 2000s. It's always weird to like look back at those periods and be like, oh yeah, I did that. Said that or I did that. Yeah. Or like you never know. Like, and I guess with stuff like
I was a very angry boy back then.
Did you have a lot of anger issues when you were like younger? Like more in your teen years and stuff?
I don't know if I had anger issues, just a lot of anger. But I was just a miserable fucking dude. And I had really bad anxiety I suspect the more I like analyze this and explore it, I think my entire life I really bad anxiety.
Oh yeah, yeah. Same thing.
I didn't really recognize it as such until the divorce basically.
That's no,
when I had the presence.
That's the one like Xanax. That's the one reassuring Xanax. Thing that's always been for me is like my mom just tells me I've been this way since I was like 4 or 5 years old, so it's like
I connected with a woman who I grew up with this down the street from this family until my parents split and I didn't really see them anymore. So, but she knows a lot about diabetes and stuff. She's kind of been my sage for, we connected before that. She's been like my diabetes sage since I got really sick with it. And, why did I bring her up? Oh, but she knows me. Last time she saw me, I was like 7. You know? And she would tell me, she's like, no, you were always like a really serious, anxious, like kid. I'm like, yeah, I know. But, I forgot what I'm talking about. Oh, yeah. I think the high anxiety can manifest into anger, tension and stuff, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I think not knowing that I was so anxious led to a lot of pent-up anger, you know?
Yeah.
Just not understanding what was going on. Because I didn't feel anxious, but I didn't realize anxiety can turn differently. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, it can...
Basically, a doctor gave me a Xanax and said, take one of these until your Zoloft kicks in.
Right.
And the first time I took the Xanax, I said, it was like all the noise was ringing through my head.
Right.
It was like, oh my God, I can live this way.
Right.
So, like, I definitely, that was probably part of it.
So, but at least you have that, like, that thing. And I think, like, that's a common thing with any sort of performer is you sort of, you're able to take whatever you have inside of you and just be like, whatever inner turmoil you have, it's just like, you can sort of use that as fuel for whatever you want to do. And it seems like you've done that. Do you have, so I wanted to ask you about the whole, like, distributing stuff for your music and everything. Is that, like, do you have, like, a set thing where it sort of is set up now that you can sort of put stuff out? Or is it still very hard to do the distribution
stuff? It's easy to get it out there. Easier than ever. I've been using, there's a company called CD Baby. And I've been using CD Baby for distribution since probably like 2001. Mm-hmm. And back then, you put your CD out, you mailed them copies of these, and then people could buy the CDs from them. And they shipped anywhere in the world, whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They took care of all that. And you could set the price how you want. So, like, they said, we're taking this much for sale. You set the price wherever you want. You keep the profit, blah, blah, blah. And as time went on, they evolved into doing digital distribution. They just recently said we're not doing physical distribution anymore.
Yeah, I've heard that with a lot of stuff.
On top of being a storefront for my CDs, they were also, if, like, Sam Goody wanted to order a bunch of my shit, that they would distribute that. Now, no one did. But if they wanted to, I did have that distribution set up. But now they slowly, over time, they started adding all the digital distribution, blah, 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 blah. So now, when I pump something out through them, it just goes everywhere, you know, for whatever price they charge. So it's really simple now. So, the last thing I put out, if it ain't broke, break it, on all streaming platforms, go listen, everyone. I literally just upload it to them, and then it slowly trickled out everywhere. Oddly enough, the first place it ended up was the Peloton music library.
Oh.
That was the first place it showed up. That was the fastest for some reason. And then, slowly gets everywhere.
Do you pay attention to a lot of, feedback, or do you sort of just put it out in the ether and be like...
I know how to get it out there, but I'm a very terrible promoter, and I don't know how to promote my shit. No, it's always my problem. And that will forever be what limited me.
Oh, yeah. It's so tough to promote yourself.
I don't know how to make my skip. Not that I'm trying stand-up anymore. I just do it for fun. But
right.
If I was out there, trying to get on shows and stuff, I'd be terrible at it. I'm just bad at that stuff. But, because I focus on the creative aspect. Everything else, not focused on, that's what I'm good at. Everything else.
Right. Everything else is so tough. It's it's the same thing for me. It's I don't know how to do any of that stuff. Some people are very good at making connections and stuff. I'm just
I just want to do stuff. There's probably 30 big rappers that are big that aren't very good at rapping, but are big because they should be the best managers on the planet.
Right.
Instead, they're really good self-promoting mediocre rappers when they should be amazing managers for better rappers. So there's a lot of that. That's a phenomenon.
Right.
But, I don't know.
I guess I meant with my last question was...
I just upload the music.
Mm-hmm.
CD Baby gets it out there. So anywhere, all my shit... I have 4 albums, 3 under the wrist and 1 under True Highway Chases is the name of the side project.
Oh.
That's the name of the group and the album. I just rap on that. I made that in 2004, but I didn't put it out until last year. It was just kind of sitting around. Never got officially released. But, and now, like I said, since it became so easy, I figured I might as well put this out.
Do you read reviews and stuff like that?
That's the thing, I don't get reviews. You have to really... When I put Recycling Sucks out, a big thing that soured me on making music at the time was, when I got it out, I was like, alright, how do I get these websites to review this? And it was hard. I think I had 2 places to... I don't even remember. I think those were ones that I had friends at or something.
Right.
Just contacting these big hip hop websites, being like, hey, what can I do to get my album reviewed by you guys?
Mm-hmm.
It just didn't go well. I don't know how to explain it. They all wanted a press kit, and I didn't want to make one. Part of it was my stubbornness. But it was...
What would a press kit include? What would you have to do for that?
I don't know. I didn't even get that far. I was just so turned off by the whole experience that I didn't want to engage in it anymore.
Right.
You know? And I just kind of stopped making music. And I was slowly becoming a family man at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And all these things kind of happened. I don't know. And I had a lot of it. I was still performing. I just wasn't making new shit. But it was I really just loved the performing aspect and the creative aspect. And everything else. It's funny, making the music part, I love writing rhymes. Rapping is one of the few, probably the only thing I feel I have a true mastery of.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? At this stage of my life. I really do feel I have a mastery of rapping. That is hard to challenge. But, the make producing part of it is still hard. I'm not a master producer, I'm pretty talented, but it's mm-hmm. it's that part can be torturous. And a lot of, I'd have more music done if I could just sit there and force myself with it. I don't know, it's hard to explain, but I love performing. It is what I really love. That's part of what got me into stand-up, is it's all performing.
Yeah, because performing is such an, it's such an indescribable thing of, like, what you do, because it's such an expression of, like, okay, I can finally do this. Like, that's the one thing that I love, like, you know, you sort of go through life and then you're like, okay, I can, like, especially when you're doing stand-up, it's so, like, kind of transactional in a way, like, I guess more transitional, I mean. Like, you just sort of, you're able to transfer so much of what you just see into what you want to talk about on stage. The thing that I think, that I'm curious with, like, when you're rapping and stuff is, like, when you get into a flow, like, how do you know, like, how long you have to go for? Like, how does timing sort of work with that? Like, is it just sort of like you just gotta stay with the beat until, like, it ends, or are you just trying to get, like, as many lines as possible just in, like, that time frame? Yeah. Or, like,
It's musical. It's so, you know, music has measures and stuff.
Right.
So I don't screw up as far as measures, but it's like basically rapping at its most basic. Mm-hmm. Like, you just kind of, your rhymes are measured the same way the music is. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, like, the average, the way in rap terms they call them bars instead of measures usually. And an average, a normal quote unquote rapper is 60 bars. So it's like, and an average rap song has 3 verses, 16 bar.
Right.
16 bar beach. That's your typical rap song. Now that, but like, it's just kind of having that rhythm within those measures is how you, it's hard to explain. It's so innate. It's like with my freestyling, like, I know, like, okay, this is the rhythm I'm going with. And that's the trickiest part of freestyling, is coming up with a word that rhymes and having the rhythm keep going.
Right.
But, and having it be interesting. If I could just rhyme basic shit forever, but I'd try to make it entertaining. But,
right.
But then, like, so, my stuff, I'm not doing a lot of typical stuff. I'm getting more strange with it. Like, the one song I have just finished writing that I'm still working on is, like, the two verses that are 24 bars each.
Oh, wow.
That's cool. So, I mean, it's just kind of a feel for me. It's just, like, I just put the one song I finished for the album so far. The first verse is 2 verses, 1 16 bar verse, then there's an 8 measure musical change up, and then the second verse comes in, and that's 24, I think. But I can't, it might be 20. I don't remember. But it's longer than the first one. But so, like, I don't even, like, my songs are shorter now because, at least so far, like, the one song I finished is like 240.
Oh.
Which is short, but I'm done with it. I said what I had to say. Musically, I have nowhere else to go that I want to go with this. The song is over. Like, I don't really. Have you ever heard Mad Villain? You ever heard that album? It's MF Doom and Madlib.
Yeah.
That album really gave me the thing where I felt like that album especially. It's like it feels like, all right, Doom's done rapping. The song's over. Nothing else.
Yeah. Doom is like, so great. Oh my god.
That album really made me, like, feel like, you know what, yeah, fuck it. I don't need to extend the song if I'm done with it. Like, this is not long a song, let's deal with it.
Yeah.
that album, for some reason, really inspired me to just, like, fuck the rules on song structure.
Right. Yeah, we didn't really talk about, like, sort of your influence or people that you sort of look up to or listen to. Like, you sort of sprinkled it in with, like, Kanye and stuff and, you know, Doom, but, like,
Kanye at all.
That was just an example. Like, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean,
I liked Kanye's first solo album a lot, and then I slowly liked it less and less. But I like a lot of his beats. But no, that's, well, the person. Do you want me to get into that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, people who you sort of were influenced by, or
the person who made me want to rap, oddly enough, was Will Smith.
Oh.
I don't know how much you know about Jazzy Jeff and Fresh Prince.
Yeah, yeah.
that was like my introduction to rap music, probably a lot of kids. Mm-hmm. Like in 86, 87, 88, they were like one of the biggest rap groups on the planet.
Right, yeah.
They were the first rap group to ever win a Grammy. Parents Just Don't Understand is the first rap song to get a Grammy.
Mm-hmm.
But that was who made me want to start rapping. Mm-hmm. That was like my real, the rap music was hearing seniors on the back of the bus and out in kindergarten playing Girls Ain't Nothing But Trouble by the Fresh Prince over and over. Which you probably don't even know that book. That kind of made that, that was, I don't know the order I got into all these people, but then, so like, I got way into Public Enemy.
Oh, I like Public Enemy, yeah.
Which was late. They weren't really famous. They weren't really popular anymore. I got, they were my shit for a while. They still are.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to wear a Public Enemy t-shirt tonight.
I mean, to me, my favorite stuff has always been, like, I like fast rap stuff. Like, that's always been, like, I always forget the name of it. I know there's a word for it, but, like, I always liked, like, Tech N9ne and, like...
There's this group called the Fushnikins. You ever heard of
that? Name sounds familiar, but I don't know if I've ever listened to
it. One of the guys in the Fushnikins rapped really, really fast.
That's, like, I don't know why. It's just...
In, like, the mid-80s, yeah, everybody kind of did, sort of.
Yeah, it's
like, you know, you take up Big Daddy Kane, it's rapping pretty
fast. Yeah, but, it's just an interesting thing. Like, I've always loved that. Like, I just like that style.
My project, I'm rapping a little faster than I did last time, but I can rap really fast if I want to.
Mm-hmm.
But the bitch to write it. I don't like writing. It's quite the writing.
Right. Yeah.
But, like, I don't do it often. I do what the beat calls for. Is how my approach has been for a long time. Like, I don't set out to go, like, oh, I'm going to rap really fast. I'm
right. Like, I also like... This. I also like stuff that is also, like, just personal and also very, like, I guess... I know there's a word for it, but, like, people who talk about, like, actual issues in the world, like...
Yeah, like conscious rap.
Yeah, that's what it's called, conscious rap, yeah.
That's usually called... Yeah, that's what Public Enemy is, the epitome of that, yeah. Back in the day, but... KRS-One, I got way into... That's what I... When I was... 13, 14 years old, that's what I wanted also. The more sustenance, the more.
Right.
But now, I kind of, as I got older and as I learned more, like, I can appreciate certain rap, like, just stylistically, even if it's just not saying anything, but the style is so cool. I don't know how to explain it.
Right.
But that's kind of like, that's kind of what rap is. But, you know, if you have a message in there.
Right.
Great. I used to try to write a lot of little shit, and then I stopped. I drop it in here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'll rarely make a song about an issue or something, but I might drop. I'll drop a line here and there to make a point. You know
right.
I
mean?
And I'm in very much. It's. I don't know. The new stuff I'm writing is very specific right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a lot. I'm also thinking. And I only got one thing done for it. I wrote some more, but I gotta write more. I'm also going to make, like, a mixtape on top of it, where I'm just rapping over Blackpink beats.
Mm.
And I only got one thing. Do you know who Blackpink is?
I don't think so.
They're a huge K-pop group.
Oh. That
my daughter likes. They're, like, the biggest. They're not BTS big, but they're right there. They're the BTS kind of. And my daughter's really into them, so I hear all their music. And some of their beats are pretty fire, so I'm slowly making a mixtape of me rapping over Blackpink beats. Also,
wow, that's really cool.
Which is just going to be a more silly project.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fun because I can just rap whatever.
Right.
So all my more snubs and stuff will be on the album, and I'll get all the sillies out on that thing. I'll probably put them out around the same time. I don't know. Probably like next year sometime.
Mm-hmm.
It depends. It depends on when I catch fire. I like catch fire immediately.
Right.
Then I'll be stuck for a month.
Yeah. It's so tough. Like, I have the same thing with, like, jokes. I'll be like, there are periods where I write so much, and then, like, most of the time, it's, like, one of my biggest, like, setbacks are really, like, the only, like, bad thing about me is I don't write as much as I want to. I usually stay with the same stuff way too long. Just to get comfortable, like, you know, you sort of, and it's the same thing we probably have when you're set as a, like, music, is you have, like, that flow that you can just go through. It's like, okay, this goes into this song. It's probably the same thing with me. It's like, this joke goes into this joke. It's like, I'm kind of at a point now where I can do stand-up without thinking, if that makes sense. It's like, I just go up and be like, this goes here, this goes to this thing. It's like, you're sort of on autopilot, which is a bad thing to be.
That's what you get from that repetition. That's
yeah.
What I'm gonna say, like, there is a positive to not constantly trying new shit.
Yeah.
Is that you start holding that old shit, which I haven't done in a while. But it's, But, that's the repetition and the owning it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's super cool that you're doing all this and that you have sort of this thing that you can do. Are you finding it better to balance with your kids now and everything, or is it still something, or is that still something that you sort of have to deal with? Is finding that time.
It's funny, I'm trying to. So last year I was trying to get the ball rolling musically when I was struggling. I'm like, we just record a bunch of freestyle on Instagram or whatever. And so I did that. And then I was like, let me do one. I was trying to come up with a way to make it interesting. So I had my daughter hand me, I was like, you go pick a bunch of shit, put it in this bag, give it to me while I'm rapping, and I'll rap about it, kind of deal. So we did that. And then she wanted to try to freestyle, so she worked on that. And eventually I brought the twins in. So the freestyle gimmick became me like trying to freestyle while preventing them from destroying my room kind of thing. So I was doing a lot of that. So I kind of included them in that, which was interesting. And then my oldest daughter, when she had spring break this past year, she was with me for a few days, and she was like, all right, the days that I'm home, I should do what my special was, meaning like music, gym, whatever. Like, I should do it at your house. So the day she was supposed to have music, I was like, let's try to make a beat together, and then we'll freestyle over it. And we did that.
Wow.
And it was cool. But I have the beat she helped make.
Does she have...
I want to make a song where, like, she's, like, not an Eminem song where he's like, hey, like, my dad's going crazy or whatever.
Yeah.
And he, like, has his daughter. I don't want to do that. But similarly, I want to, like, write some shit and have her say, pop right out of the song. But the beat is fucking evil that she came up with, so it's like...
Oh, that's great.
But I don't know what the fuck we're going to do with it.
Does that feel...
I'm going to have to do a lot of work, but... I try to involve them in this, but interesting.
Right. That must feel cool that she has...
The twins aren't even free yet, but...
That must feel cool that she has the same, I guess, like, skill, at least, to it, or knack for it.
She picked up freestyle pretty quick for her age. She's not, like, good at it, but She picked up certain aspects of it quicker than I expected, for sure.
Right. And at least you can bond with her over. That's super cool.
Watch her freestyle. But, I don't know. She's got a good ear. She's got good rhythm. She definitely has the requisite music stuff. There's some people that don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
There are people that are just so rhythmless, no matter what you do, they're never going to. I've seen it.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense. It's just like you...
So she has the requisite abilities, I think. She didn't want to do it. She's
not. Yeah.
You know, she's 8 years old. She doesn't know she wants to do it.
Right. My oldest nephew.
We just switched from gymnastics to cheerleading for the fall. So to see how that goes.
Oh, yeah. My oldest nephew, he's like 10. And the thing that always like surprises me is just how much like stuff he does. Like, I didn't do like any sports or anything. When I was a kid, he plays so many sports, he plays so many instruments. It's like, kids today have so much, like, stuff they can do. I look at how, like, untalented I was during my kid years. I'm like, that's crazy.
My niece, man. My niece is, like, this awesome banjo player, and she's like, I don't even know.
It's like, when you just have that energy to do whatever you're, like, is on your mind, it's like, oh, that's...
Yeah,
that's great. It like,
changes. Like, yeah,
it changes so much.
I wish I had some of the skills I had now with the energy I had when I was 20.
Oh yeah, it's just like you wish that you had that same. It's the same thing that I feel with stand-up. It's like I like it still. I still love stand-up, but it's so different. I can be so bitter and jaded by stuff, and it just like I always love. That's why I love like whenever I see new people. Like when you see new rappers, do you sort of have the same thing where you sort of feed off that sort of energy and that sort of...
No, it's way different. I don't really discover new... most of the rap I listen to is guys I've listened to forever.
Ah.
And, like, guys that I would see... I haven't been to a rap show in a while. Like, guys that I'd, like, especially a local one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of my own lane, and I'm so, like, ingrained in who I am with it now that, like, I'm so in my own lane that... It takes a lot. The guys that inspire me are guys that listen to forever.
Right.
Like, I'm a big fan of Aesop Rock.
Oh, Yeah, fantastic.
LP and Run the Jewels. LP did a huge LP change. LP production changed how I do rap. Not so much the Run the Jewels stuff, though. I like that a lot also. But his solo stuff really changed how I see music and rap. It's hard to explain. So like that's what really inspires me is those guys do shit more so than like new artists.
Yeah.
Occasionally, like Danny Brown is a newer artist. I started listening. I guess he's not that new at this point, but he's newer than most of the shit I listen to. And he's like my age, so it makes sense.
Right, that makes sense. So when you have that connection of like, okay, the same, you know, stuff that you grew up in.
Yeah, he's got an aesthetic that I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, no wonder.
Right.
So I don't know.
Yeah, it's...
It's more just new stuff by people I like already. That'll inspire me more than anyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like you really have just this new, like we said earlier, like lease on life and things you want to do with your music and rapping and everything. And it seems like you just sort of, like you said, you're sort of stuck in it now that you can do it. Not stuck in like a bad way, but it's just like, oh, you can do it now a little bit more. So what are your, I know you mentioned it a lot. What's your upcoming album going to be called?
I don't know.
Oh, you don't know?
I don't have a name for it yet.
You don't have a name for it yet. How many songs do you have, like, for it?
I only have one song. Another one that's very close. I have parts of four or five other things. So I don't know. It's in the very, very early stages. So, like, if it's done before, if I have anything I can release as a project done before, I would say springtime at the earliest. That's if I have a really productive winter. You know, I'd be surprised if it was before that. I don't work at the pace I used to do. It's hard. It's hard to say. Like, I can have a week. Next week, I can get so inspired that I crank out six new things in a week. You know? So it's really hard to say, like, timing-wise. Like, I don't have any deadlines or anything, which is how I like to operate. I don't have a goal. Like, I need to get 10 songs done by December. Well, you know, I don't really, that ruins it for me if I try to operate that way.
Yeah.
So, it doesn't have a title. I know conceptually what I want to call it, but I haven't found the word yet.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
How long does it take you?
I don't want to go too far into it.
Right.
Because there's a good chance I'll change my mind by then.
Right. Do you?
Like when I do a project, it's always ever evolving. So mm-hmm. Like until I put it out. So it's like what I think will be the overall theme of it, what I think is going to be, could change halfway through. Like, one song I'm working on started as one thing, and then now it's completely become a song about me almost dying. And it wasn't that at all when I started it, and I haven't changed anything. So it's like fascinating how that's worked, how that put that together. So it's like, for me anyway.
Right.
But, I don't know. No, it doesn't have a name yet.
Four
out there, so.
Right.
People should
listen to us. Do you have,
like... The last one I put out, If It Ain't Broke, Break It, that I put out last year. I'm very proud of that. I produced everything on that. So,
oh, wow.
Everything on there except for the scratching is me. My buddy DJ started the scratches.
Well, that's cool that you at least know how to do all that stuff. You know, I can imagine there's a few rappers that just, like, they just do the music part. Or is that kind of, like, I guess, prevalent in what people do is that they work with the beat themselves.
It depends. That's another era thing. Like for example, like in the like Onyx or Tribe Called Quest, like their albums in the '90s, like they were in the house producing their own shit.
Mm-hmm.
Now Onyx works with like Snow Goose and like other people. Like it's become more mercenary. The production over time with hip hop became a lot more mercenary. Like
right,
where you tried to grab the biggest. Especially like mainstream shit, they try to grab whoever the biggest producers of time are and make, really, it's like, I don't know, but I could go into this forever, but I believe most big rap guys, I don't know how many produce their own shit anymore. I don't think it's a ton. Well, LP is the big name I can think of. LP and Run the Jewels does all the production and also raps, and he's always been that way, and I've always been that way, but then I stopped. Like, I didn't produce anything of Recycling Sucks. But I produced everything on the name. And I'm producing basing everything on the new one, most likely. Unless someone says, hey, look, listen to this. This would be good for you. And I actually think it's, that could happen. But that's probably not going to happen.
Yeah. And it gives you... It probably gives you more... what's it called, to, like, freedom to be self-produced, right? Because, like, I imagine if you had to work with some other, like, producer or something, they'd make you do, like, I don't know, something you wouldn't want to do.
I've done plenty of both, so, I mean, I know how it works. And I've done both, and I've done plenty of both. So, I know how it works. I definitely prefer producing myself, but it is a lot more work, and there's certain things other producers can do that I can't. You know what I mean? So it's like, it limits me sometimes, but I don't know. It's, I, the best part about, I don't get it as much from stand-up. Like, music, like, I love when I, like, the one song I've done for the project, I'm in the mode where I listen to it 10,000 times a day to try to, like, listen to, like, oh, how can I fix this mix? Oh, I can change that drum here. Like, I'll make subtle changes. Possibly before it comes out, but only I'm gonna notice. But it's just kind of basking in the, like, wow, my brain made this. Especially like what I'm doing now, I'm not really sampling. It's all like me playing keyboards and guitars and stuff. And so like it really is like, oh, this is like my brain made this whole thing happen. You know what I mean? And just kind of basking in that. That feeling doesn't get old to me. Like when I make a new song, I'm like, wow, this is. This is nothing but the manifestation of my brain.
Right.
Made this happen.
Do you have any, inclination or, like, thing of, like, wanting to be signed to a label or anything like that?
No, that's not... This is the catch-22 with that. So, like, I'm a terrible self-promoter, as I said. Give me one second. My ex-wife is... You might have to cut this out. Calling me, I'm not
going to
answer,
though. I'm going to
text her, so I'm calling
at
different doors.
All right, well, we can finish up soon. Like, okay. I started recording again because I didn't know if you were taking a call or not, so I started recording again.
I was just texting her, like, what the hell's wrong. But,
All right, well... That was just one of my other questions. I know I didn't want to keep you too long. I didn't want to, like, end, I don't know, before, like, if you had more to say and more to talk about. Because I want to just give you...
I could go forever.
Give you your full, you know, thing. But thank you so much for being on. And, you know, the only thing I wanted to ask is, like, album art stuff. Like, do you work on that yourself, or is that something that you have a guy for?
That's an interesting can of worms. So, the two projects I put out last year, I just made the covers using AI art.
Oh.
I don't think the ethics of that are obviously very complicated.
Right.
But I like that because I'm not a visual artist. I'm not, I've never took the time to learn it. It's not where my talents naturally go. Although I drew, as a kid, I used to draw all the time. I kind of abandoned that when I discovered rap. But anyway, I mean, I guess I could have been had I focused on that. But I have my own concepts, and I'm never, like, the guy who did the album art for Recycling Sucks is a dude out there, and I paid him to do it, and he did kind of what I asked. But it wasn't exactly what I envisioned. But I can't pay him to do, like, 10,000 mock-ups, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like, yeah, I don't know. That's how I did the last two. That's my plan for the next one too, but I understand the ethical complications behind it. Because I probably would pay an artist otherwise.
Right.
One of my best friends, the graphic designer, would probably do what I want if he would, but he's very lazy. It's hard to I know people. I could get it paid. I don't know. I kind of like having that control. You know?
Right.
So, and if you go to Spotify, if you go to the last two, if you go to either If It Ain't Broke, Break It, or you look up True Highway Chases, you know the videos that play on Spotify?
Yeah.
Like, so I have videos set up for those two albums. And it basically transitioned. It's transitioning alternate covers I made when I was trying to make a cover. So that's like, I used it that way. So it's kind of, I don't know. I enjoy IAR. It's fun, but I totally get the ethical complications.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. I totally get that, too. Yeah.
The AI music stuff is getting more prevalent now, and I have not really dove into it. I'm not sure how it's going.
Yeah.
Man, I can go along with the nasty.
Well, at least you have this whole entire new thing that you're doing and that you're able to do what you love and get your kids involved. And it's like, you know, I'm glad that you're able to have that because, you know, so many people don't do, like, that's the one thing that I learned early on in life when I started doing stand-up and I had other jobs, like, during it was, like, so many people just don't, they forget that they wanted to do stuff when they were little. And they just sort of become an adult, and they're like, oh, well, I don't have any more dreams anymore. It's like, you know.
Yeah, that's what I tell, especially, like, that I'm single, and I'm entering the dating world. I tell women, like, yeah, I'm trying to stay as mature as I can.
Right, because you probably want to be with someone who has dreams.
I mean, a lady who does not like that answer, it fixes a lot of problems.
Right.
So, but, yeah, I'm not trying to grow up, well. It's a balance of being a tricky thing to pull off as a divorced father, but you can do it.
Right. Well, at least you're doing it. I mean, that's awesome, you know, that you have that. So your Instagram is, it's like sort of connected. It's like Seth the Wrist, right?
No, that's what people think of it. It's Seth the Wrist.
Seth the Wrist.
Like Sether.
Sether. Oh, okay.
S-E-T-H-E-R-W-R-I-S-T, because that was originally a combination of Seth and Tara Wrist once upon a time.
Right. So
stubborn,
at least
everybody misreads it as Seth the Wrist. It's been a problem, but I'm stubborn, so it's staying Seth the Wrist.
Right.
That's what all my stuff is. If you search that on anything, you're gonna find me one way or another.
All right, great.
But if you search the wrist, it might some streaming services. That's not enough because I'm not famous enough. But if you put like the wrist, recycling sucks, or the wrist, if it ain't broke, you'll find my last finish.
So. That's great. Are you going to the mic tonight?
I'm planning to.
Yeah, I'm excited for that.
As long as no ill-timed naps or crazy things happen, yeah.
Right, that makes sense. All right, well, great. Thanks for doing this, and I'm glad that I could have you on to do this because I know you wanted to, you know, talk about all this and get your stuff out and everything.
Yeah.
All right,
man.
All right, great. See you later.
Cool.
All right. Bye.